Welcome into another edition of What Barry's Talking About from Barry 360. I'm Dan Blakely. On this week's program, spring has sprung, the grass has risen, still we wonder where winter is. We look back at the abnormal winter and hear what spring has in store. Measles, no need to panic, but there is need to be mindful. We get advice from Simcoe County's Chief Medical Officer of Health. Uplifting Blessings is looking for help for young people this Easter. We find out what they're looking for and how you can help. This year's Bowl for Kids' Sake begins today. We have the details for you, and the Barry Colts have had some trouble putting wins together lately, but they have qualified for the playoffs. We get the conversation started after this.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Spring arrived this week after a winter for the record, not in terms of record lows and record snowfalls, but the lack of both. Environment Canada's David Phillips tells us it was a lost season.
I can't really ever remember this one. This blew everybody out of the water. I mean, we said it was going to be a warmer than normal winter with El Nino and climate change and all those things. But nobody would have guessed that it would have been so extraordinarily warm, broke every record in the book, cost Canada in many provinces and territories, in different cities. I mean, Toronto, my gosh, it was the warmest in... Well, there's no other warmer winter in Toronto in 180 years, and I dare say in the Barrie Simcoe area, that is also the same situation. What really shocked me was the persistence of the warmth. You know, typically when you find up here in the Barrie, Lake Simcoe area, you find a temperature winter that, oh my gosh, December was kind of cold. We had definitely had a white Christmas. It came around Remembrance Day, and it stayed right through to January. And then January kind of warmed up. We had a protracted thaw, and then February was kind of so-so. No, not this year. It was warm from the get-go, and I kept thinking that, well, winter is just delayed. No, it was canceled. I mean, my gosh, we saw temperatures in the traditional months of winter, December, January, February, over 4 degrees warmer than normal in the Barrie area. We had half the amount of snow, and typically when it's warmer than that, you really usually get more snow. But no, we had about 75% of what we normally would get. We had no days below minus 20. I mean, Dan, we get 12 of those in an average kind of winter. In a cold winter, we'd have many more of them. So it was really, people were just absolutely shocked by it. I mean, there was a lot of disappointment from winter recreation, and this is a big area for skiing and snowmobiling and ice fishing and just going for a walk on the winter's night and hearing that crunch of snow under your feet. I mean, this didn't happen this year, and we had more rain than snow, which we rarely do we see. So it was really just absolutely saved money on our home heating bills and easier from getting around. But I think in the sense that, hey, there probably was some disappointment in some circles, but certainly it seems soft and open as our ancestors would describe it.
I suspect, too, as much as you say there was a downside for recreation, there's a downside for some other things as well. I'm thinking forest fires and such. Is there going to be some offshoot from the mild winter to those kinds of things?
Well, Dan, I really think so. I always think that to do a full accounting of the season you've just finished, you have to wait till the next season or the season after. I always say, you know, the weather you're blessing right now may be the weather you're cursing later on. We don't know the true impacts of this particular non-winter that we had. I mean, just imagine, the maple syrup industry was just, it was disappointing. They started early, and it was quick and over, and my gosh, the quality wasn't that good. So they were really felt the effects of that. We also have had this warming up, and it's caused trees to bud earlier. And so the certainly the allergy season is a little earlier than normal. People suffering usually in May are suffering in March because of an early kind of growing taking place. I mean, now the flood season is non-existent. I looked at records in the Barrie and Lake and sort of in the Simcoe area, and there's no snow sitting on the ground. There may still be. I mean, my gosh, we've never had a spring without some snow in the Barrie area. But in the last 5 years up in the Muskoka area, typically at this time of the winter, there was anywhere between 45 and 75 centimeters of snow yet to leave and to get into the streams and lakes and rivers. Well, there's nothing. So clearly we think there'll be no baling and bagging going on, so that may be a positive thing. But just think of all the mosquitoes and the black flies. I mean, we may just get swarmed by those this year because of the fact that it's not been cold enough to kill those vermins and varmints and creatures and like that. So again, as I say, I mean, we just really don't know the full implications. It might have seemed a kind of pleasant. You didn't have to migrate or hibernate because of this winter, but my gosh, we really don't have to. We just really can't say for sure what the full impact, the accounting of this particular non-winter that we had.
We talk every year about how there's always one more winter storm out there, but it generally comes and goes very quickly, and that's kind of what the taste of winter has been anyway.
Well, that's true, and you're so right about that. I always think that, you know, we get to this time, we come to the first day of spring, and people think, well, okay, winter may be over, but winterish weather is not over. And we're going to see it this week we're in. My gosh, last week it was the early beginnings of summer-like conditions, and now it's sort of late winter. I mean, we see nothing but flurries in the air this particular week. Temperature highs, instead of being +4, I mean, hey, it's maple syrup weather. +4 and -6 is the normal for this week. And all we're going to see in some days is just temperatures below freezing morning, noon, and night. And certainly by the end of the week, highs of -2, not +5 or +6. So I think it's sort of like a return to winter. Yet, really, it's not much different than we normally would see for the end of March. And so my sense is it's always this duking it out at this time of the year. We think the calendar says spring, but the nature has a different schedule or agenda. And what we see this year is kind of a cool end to March. I mean, March, sort of the first half of March, was very lamb-like. But I think in the second half, it's going to be more lion-like. I mean, colder than normal, colder than what we think it should be, given how warm it was. I mean, after all, people were thinking it was early summer last week, and now we have temperatures, instead of +20, we have highs of -2 and -3 in some areas. So, and nighttime temperatures of -12. So my sense is, don't take the snow tires off quite yet. Don't take out the lawn furniture quite yet. It's not here. We're going to go through a bit of full spring. Now, our forecast for the spring, for really the April, May, June, is warmer than normal. So it's not as if we're going to be punished for the lack of a winter. It's not as if nature's going to try to make up for it. I think, but our model suggests that El Nino is, hey, it's dying. It's not dead in the water yet. And we've had a balmy kind of winter. So I often think that, you know, one of the sort of signs of spring is how cold and snowy was the winter, because you have to get rid of all that snow, thaw up the ground, get rid of the ice, and before springish kind of weather arrives. Well, we've already got rid of that. It never arrived. So the rivers and streams are wide open. The snow is gone. Anything we get now will just be a kind of a nuisance kind of snow. Certainly you can't ski on it. And what nature bringeth one day, you can take away the next day because of either rain or temperatures that get up to the melting scale. So my sense is that we're going to ease into the spring. spring. Now, April will be warmer than normal, but the end of March will be a little cooler than normal. So we just have to be patient. 2 weeks of kind of winterish weather with heavy jackets or the occasional winter gear, and then, my gosh, we'll be getting into the mud season and the growing season, and people can think of the fact that, hey, that spring has brought. After all, you look at the calendar, and typically we do get, on average, in the Barrie area, after the middle of March, we still get, on average, about 28 centimeters of snow on average. We've had some big dumps in late April and early May, about 11% of our annual total. And after all, I mean, it's that old tale about when you buy your flowers. My gosh, it's usually the long weekend in May, I've heard. It's a lot earlier nowadays, but my gosh, that's still 2 months away. So I think that it may come slowly to you, but really, from nature's point of view, I always think an easing into spring is better for the most.
It laughed a couple of weeks ago. Somebody posted on social media, it was like winter and spring were in a custody battle over us.
I think there's some truth to that. I don't know, Dan. It was something. I mean, hey, we are the, you know, we're the winter people. The second coldest country in the world and the snowiest. And it wasn't just Barrie and Lake Simcoe or Toronto. It was Canada from coast to coast to coast. Canadians were chortling and thinking, oh, my gosh, this has been kind of a gentle kind of there were some face-numbing wind chills at times, but overall, it was absolutely a kind of, well, I did an analysis in the Barrie area, and I found that this kind of winter, if you looked at the models, the climate change models for the next century, this would be kind of a winter that would be normal in about 2060 or 2065. So just think, we had this winter a glimpse of what it will be like for children today who become parents and grandparents later this century. Again, we'll have warmer winters by 2065, but this will be normal. We won't always be talking about this winter in 40 or 50 years from now, because, my gosh, it would be considered to be normal. But what would happen? We got it in 2024.
If I'm still talking about weather in 2060, David...
Well, Dan, don't go there. I know I won't be. I'll be safely dead before we have to deal with these things.
We won't have to answer to anybody.
No, exactly.
David, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward to your summer forecast in 3 months.
Okay, Dan. We'll promise to do it outside next time.
I like the sound of that. No need to panic, but a need to be vigilant with more cases of measles being reported across the country. Who's most at risk? What can you do? What should you do to protect you and your family? Barrie 360's Ian McLennan gets some answers from Simcoe Muskoka's Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Charles Gardner.
I thought with measles outbreaks, at least in our part of the world, we've put that on the back burner. Why now is this disease front and center on the healthcare radar again?
Measles has always been a highly contagious disease, and it's always been critically important that we maintain a really high immunization level, optimal immunization, in order to keep it from spreading. Without immunization, it would just spread extremely readily. It is airborne. It can be transmitted through a person and in passing in an environment and lingers in the air for another 2 hours after a person who's shedding the virus has left that environment. So spreads really easily, can be quite severe as a disease. There can be complications from it. Most people do recover from it, but it can be fairly unpleasant to have, for one, but also lead to severe bacterial pneumonia, life-threatening, loss of vision, or brain injury. So important that we maintain it entirely controlled. And we've been able to do that for many years. There's always been measles transmitted in other locations in the world and cases brought on a sporadic basis through travel here. But what we've always sought to do is prevent the spread of measles. At this point in time, we're more vulnerable to the spread of measles. There's been some reduction in immunization coverage for young children coming out of the pandemic, that the response to the pandemic was all-consuming for the healthcare system, and for that reason, we weren't able to keep up the immunization that we needed to do to be optimally protective. And we are seeing right now a significant number of travel-related cases, people traveling from other countries becoming infected and coming back here. And with those cases, is the potential for spread. When we have a case, there is a very strong effort on the part of public health to, through history with the case, identify all locations where they had been while they've been communicable, while they've been able to spread the virus, find out where they've been in a public location or with other people and at what times, and then identify people who might have been contacts.
If a person has been in place where they may have been exposed to measles, what's the timeline for development of symptoms, and what are the symptoms?
So up to 21 days after the last point of contact with a case that is still communicable, a person can begin to develop their symptoms and start to become contagious. They become contagious 4 days before the onset of the rash that is typical of measles, and carry that on until 4 days after the onset of the rash. So there's that rather prolonged period of time with this virus before people may emerge as a case. It's typically shorter than that, typically in the range of 10 to 12 days before they begin with their symptoms, but it can be as long as 21 days.
Is vaccine hesitancy playing a role in the red flag now around measles?
I think the major issue just was the great challenge that we had with the pandemic, and we were not able to keep up routine childhood immunizations, us in public health, but also the broader healthcare system, leaving us more vulnerable to transmission at this time. So just the inability to keep that up, and then the great task of catching it up at this time, which we've been working on for the past year.
Okay, for parents and guardians, how do they make sure their children's vaccines are up to date?
So first dose, typically at 1 year of age, and it's really to be optimum, two doses. So second dose between the ages of 4 and 6. Although in an urgent situation, the second dose can be given 28 days after the first dose. And this is a partnership between parents and their primary care provider to be providing immunization in those early years. Public health, we're available to help with that too, and we do provide the vaccines to primary care providers and provide the guidance and advice about the provision. And then when you get into school-age children, there's an enforcement role for public health. This is one of the routine immunizations for which the Immunization of School Pupils Act applies, requiring immunization and documentation reporting of immunization status for diseases such as measles, and public health to enforce that.
People might be asking, what's the care for a person who has been infected with measles? And secondly, people asking, okay, I think I've had one jab of the measles vaccine, maybe two. Am I protected? Do I need another needle? What are the rules around this?
A person who contracts measles, that needs to be managed very carefully in the healthcare system to avoid transmission to others. So they need to be managed in what we call a negative pressure room, provided care by staff who are fully immunized and wearing personal protective equipment, including an N95 mask, a highly effective mask. So they need to be managed in that way until they recover. And certainly while they're still communicable, that, you know, 2 weeks after the onset of the rash period. And they'll maintain protection for the rest of their lives after they've been infected. With regards to immunization, two-dose immunization provides 97% protection. So there can be the occasional vaccine failure where a person is fully immunized, becomes a case, but if that happens, it's generally less severe, they're less contagious, and it's relatively rare given the 97% protection. And we are looking at the optimum is 2-dose immunization. So certainly recommending for people who are adults born after the year 1970 who are traveling that they would ensure that they've had 2 doses of immunization. Even for those who were born, before 1970, generally they're considered to probably have been infected in their lives, probably protected. But even those individuals, if they're traveling, federal recommendations are that they get a dose of vaccine to reduce their risk. And healthcare workers should all be doubly vaccinated, regardless of their age.
So who is at most risk for severe outcome from measles?
So in terms of severe outcomes, the people we're most concerned about are pregnant individuals, because this can, if contracted in pregnancy, result in the loss of the pregnancy or prematurity for the baby. And people who are immunosuppressed, if some kind of medical condition that reduces their immune response, or young children, particularly those who are too young, generally speaking, to get the vaccine, so those under 1 year of age. And I would note a slight modification there. For at this point in time, it's recommended that children 9 months of age and above get the vaccine if they're traveling, if their parents are taking them overseas, some out of country. But generally, the younger people, young children, particularly people who aren't immunized, those who are immunosuppressed, and pregnant people.
As for getting a measles vaccine, doctor, how does one go about it in Simcoe Muskoka? And of course, that includes Barrie and Orillia.
We are offering ourselves our services with our vaccination clinics, particularly for measles at this time, but other vaccines as well, routine immunizations, and have that up on our website for people to contact us to be able to book for a clinic. And we're offering special clinics right now for measles immunization.
Find locations and times for vaccination clinics. And for more information about measles, log on to SimcoeMuskokaHealth.org. Not been a great stretch for the Barrie Colts. Went 5 games without a win until this week, but even with those losses, they were able to secure a playoff spot. Our Will Konkin and Colts writer and broadcaster Gene Pereira take a look at what's to come.
Things are winding down now for the Colts there. Gene clinched the final playoff spot in the OHL and didn't even have to get a win to do it. But they've recently had a bad stretch, went on a losing streak. How are the spirits looking on the team?
Well, I think it's just been a busy run, and I think the guys are kind of looking forward to the end of the regular season, getting in the playoffs now that everything's pretty set. I mean, they're going to finish 8th in the conference, and it looks more and more like Oshawa, so that is set. But right now, it's just been a real busy run for the Colts. They got off a 5-game-in-8-days run, and now to close out the season, they're playing 7 games in 10 days, and it's really caught up to them, not only physically draining, but I think mentally, which is what Marty Williamson talked about on Sunday in Niagara. He thought the energy was fine after played Saturday against Sudbury and then back Sunday afternoon against Niagara. But he said mentally it just wasn't there. And, you know, it's tough to get up for games every night. And right now it's just a tough stretch. And, you know, the league schedule maker didn't do Barrie any favors here down the stretch. But, even then, in fairness, you have the one game that was moved to Tuesday night and against Niagara, which was the ice mishap earlier that forced that game to move. And then earlier as well, I think a game, Wednesday night's game in North Bay, has been rescheduled as well from earlier in the year. So it's just made for a really busy stretch. And I think right now they're just trying to get past through this healthy and get to the end of the regular season.
Wrapping up the final games of the regular season, they take on Sudbury on Friday, then Peterborough Saturday at Sadlin. Who they beat out of a playoff spot, it seems a little fitting. I assume, like you had just mentioned, the goal for these last two is just to keep everyone healthy, but the Colts are already dealing with injuries.
Yeah, obviously you don't want to kind of go in on a big losing streak, and, they'd gone kind of a hit stretch and where they hadn't, they were exhausted and had gone on a bit of a losing run. And, obviously these last 2 games, Friday in Sudbury and Saturday with Peterborough, you want to really just make sure you stay healthy. Don't develop bad habits is something you hear coaches say all the time. And, you know, get through that, those games. But for Barry, unfortunately, the injury bug has struck of late, lately. Ronick Jodwan injured himself in that Ottawa game. And Marty Williamson said he'll certainly be out the rest of the regular season. And, you know, he remains questionable for the playoffs. And as well, the same for Zach Weigel, who left Sunday's game. So, you know, that's what you want to kind of avoid. And it makes it tougher, too, as well, for if Barry did want to sit players. Now you get injuries, so you only have so many bodies, you know, that come in. So it's something that you certainly want to avoid. Just get to that game Saturday night, play it out, you know, play well as you can, and then get ready for the playoffs.
It looks like they'll line up with either Oshawa, Mississauga, maybe even North Bay in the first round. Who are you leaning towards matchup-wise?
Well, I think right now it's Oshawa. Oshawa's got two games. If they win both those games, it's definitely the Oshawa Generals that are in the seat, the driver's seat. And, you know, again, they play Friday in Kitchener, which will be, I think, the big one there. But, you know, it's a tough matchup for Barry if it is the Oshawa Generals. I mean, anybody they play, North Bay is another team that could sneak in if they win the remainder of their three games and Oshawa loses one. So still plenty. It's just really the Eastern Conference, the top, the first six teams. It's just been back and forth all year, especially down the stretch drive. It's been really tight. And I think for the Colts, you know, playing Oshawa here, you know, the Oshawa has really finished strong, and they're going to have their hands full. From what I understand is that there's a likelihood, you know, if you look at it, Thursday, a schedule has been announced, but Thursday, Friday, Sunday are their home dates, and maybe Tuesday, Thursday would be games 3 and 4 back in Barrie. But, you know, again, that schedule has yet to be announced, and we'll probably find out before Saturday.
It's just about playoff time. Next time we chat, we'll break down the Colts' first-round match. Till then, Gene.
Perfect. Thanks, Will.
What Barry's Talking About is a weekly podcast featuring the best Barry and Simcoe County have to offer and more. You can get caught up and make it easy to keep up in the future by subscribing to What Barry's Talking About through any podcast distributor. Now this.
It's cool to care.
It's a well-known fact blood transfusion saves lives. It's also a well-known fact that the world relies on voluntary unpaid donations to fill the need for blood. The need for blood never ends. Canadian Blood Services in Barrie is calling on you to help save a life. Please consider donating today. Appointments are mandatory and must be booked in advance. Book today at blood.ca, through the Give Blood app, or by calling 1-888-2-DONATE.
Cool to Care is brought to you by the Peggy Hill Team. Keeping it real all the way to sold. Reach out now at peggyhill.com.
It's Cool to Care with 107.5 Cool FM.
Bowl for Kids' Sake is back, raising not just funds for big brothers and big sisters in our region, but also awareness and hoping to find some new bigs. Executive Director Bree Lefevre is with our Ian McLennan.
Bowl for Kids' Sake is one of the, if not the largest fundraiser for your organization. It takes place in March. Tell us a bit about, you know, how it's all set up and the importance of this event.
Yes, that's right. It's our largest fundraiser of the year. It's an annual inaugural event that's gone on for quite some time now. And quite a bit of pressure because we have our goal is $130,000 this year. So a big number. But all of that goes directly towards supporting our mentoring programs. So it will fund our ability to really reach out and support youth through Barrie and District this coming year and beyond.
And tell us a bit about how teams can get involved or how teams come to be.
Yeah, it's been really exciting to watch it unfold because we have so many supporters who have come back year over year. It's been really exciting to see how engaged everyone has been, how people just wait for this opportunity. I've been involved with the organization for only 5 months, and yet almost as soon as I started meeting companies and people who have been involved for so long, and they were talking about this coming up of when is it going to be, and we can't wait, and we've got this coming forth. So the easiest way for people to get involved is to go to our website at barry.bigbrothersbigsisters.ca. There's a registration link there. So you can either go there and register a team, you can go and join a team who's already registered, as well as you can go and pledge someone else if you can't happen to make it yourself that day. You can also go there and become either one of our monthly supporters or provide a one-time donation that would go into all of these funds as well. So almost all the information that you need is right on the website, but of course we're always available by phone or email for support as well.
And how extensive do you have in terms of a wait list for kids that need a big brother, big sister?
Yeah, that's been something that's been really challenging. We're seeing a lot of increase, especially since COVID. I think we all know it. We all feel it still. Some of the challenges that exist, increased isolation, increased family demands, we're all very aware of cost of living. So there's a much higher level of stress generally that is, I think we all feel. And then that's being seen in our requests for support. So we're almost at the point now we're going to have to stop intaking wait lists because of the number of children that are on there. We are in desperate need of bigs and mentors to come in. So we're conscious of not wanting to have littles brought onto the list when the list is this large and our intake is so low, because we know that they may never be matched.
And where are we at? I mean, today, I know it yeah. fluctuates, but where are we at today?
I think we're just around the 30 children on our one-to-one waitlist mark. We serve hundreds of children every year. And this is for the direct one-to-one community base. So the program that most people are familiar with, definitely the one I was most familiar with, of the traditional one-to-one, here's a big, here's a little, out in the community for a couple of hours a week for a minimum of a year. This is the one that has proven most challenging because of a lack of volunteers. So if anyone is interested in ways to be able to offer that and you would be able to connect with the youth just to be able to offer those supports, we fully train all of our mentors so they come in with a really solid knowledge base of how to connect in a developmental relationship way with our youth. But there's also school-based mentoring programs, group mentoring programs that can require slightly less of a time commitment. And sometimes that helps us to reach more children as well as meet children where they are for their needs base. Because it doesn't always work for all families for that one-to-one connection. So we are definitely looking for mentors, and families in the community are definitely seeking excess support.
And who are the kids in terms of the age? They get to choose an age, you know, the big brother, big sister, they get to pick an age they'd like. And what is the range?
Yeah, the age range of what we support is between 6 and 18. So generally they age out at the 18 mark. The vast majority tend to kind of come in somewhere between the 8 to 12 point. I think as a parent, you know, you start to see that age range and really recognize that your children could use some more support. And that's one of the things that I've found so inspiring since beginning is the amount of love that these families have for their children. So it's from a wide demographic. I used to always think it was mostly single parent led, where that's not necessarily the case. These are just families who are strapped for time and attention, really recognize that their children could use more support. Because as we know as parents, we can't be it all. So they come in recognizing that their children and their youth could use more support through a really strong adult relationship who is able to come along as a friend. And that's exactly what we're seeking and exactly what we create.
And the mentoring and the friendship, if somebody's thinking of getting involved, but think, oh, you know, I don't know if I can entertain, or I don't know if I have the budget to do this, as if they're supposed to shower the youngster with, you know, gifts or something. That's not what it's about, right?
Not at all. Not at all. I think we all know that our most valuable currency is time. Number one, I look forward in my day. I'm always trying to find that eighth day of the week, the 25th hour of the day. And yet really that's what these kids need. It's just undivided time and attention. It can be a walk in a park. It can be coloring in a book. It can just be conversation over a coffee. It's the simplest times of those undivided attention from an adult who once again is trained. We really show you how to come alongside to be a strong mentor, and we're right there to support every step of the way, no matter what type of mentoring program you're involved in.
To register for Bowl for Kids' Sake, log on to barry.bigbrothersbigsisters.ca. Now, if bowling is not up your alley, here's something else for you to consider. Uplifting Blessings, a not-for-profit helping vulnerable youths with what they call suitcases of love, filled with clothing, hygiene products, and more. Here again is Will Konkin in conversation with Uplifting Blessings founder, Carolyn Marie Goodwin.
What are the details for your Easter drive coming up?
So our Easter drive is geared to helping children from infant to 12 years of age. Our Easter baskets are going to vulnerable children, and they are identified and chosen by our community service organizations that we work with. And those are Simcoe Muskoka Family Connections, DB Child and Family Services in Rama, and Chippewa of Rama First Nations Child and Family Services in Rama, and North Simcoe Victim Services.
What type of donations are you looking for?
We are looking for spring outfits like shirts and shorts, underwear and socks, children's hygiene, two-in-one body wash, toothpaste, toothbrushes, hairbrushes, deodorant, hair accessories, baby hygiene, face cloths, sunscreen, hats, sunglasses if possible, shoes, treats like your regular chocolates for Easter, and candies that are nut-free for allergy reasons, stuffed animals, gift cards to Giant Tiger to put together these Easter baskets.
An assortment of a lot of things, eh?
Yes, we try to gear it towards, yes, the fun and excitement is of Easter, because of course it's going to children, so we want it to be exciting. Every child wakes up on Easter and wants to go around and collect eggs and have like a little something to open, so we gear it towards that. But we also like to provide what, because the seasons are changing, we like to provide what the child will need as a basic necessity going into the spring season. So that's why we like to do the hats, the sunglasses, the sunscreen for protection, of course, hygiene items so that they can stay clean, and a new spring outfit so they can enjoy the outdoors, as well as shoes so they can also enjoy the outdoors with a new pair of shoes on.
If people have these things, where do they drop them off or provide the donations?
So if someone is wishing to donate any of the items that are listed, we have drop-off locations for our Easter drive. The first two that I'll mention are our two headquarters. We have two headquarters. We have Northern Roots Hair Studio. We also have Coach House Kids in Orillia. Both locations generously donate their basements so that we can do what we do in the community, which is very generous of them, so they collect donations year-round. And then we also have a lot of local businesses that are also participating right now, which are Starbucks on Memorial Avenue is collecting on our behalf. We also have the book review, and we have in Barrie, we also have a location helping us. The Flying Monkeys is also collecting on our behalf.
I saw, too, that you were looking for sponsors for the Easter drive. Tell me what that is.
We also would love people to participate what we call in adoptions. And that is, we get a child and the child's information. Everything is kept confidential, but we give them the basics like the child's age, the size of clothing that they wear, the size of shoes that they wear, likes and interests, things of that nature, gender. And then that way an individual can go out and get that list so they can get the hat, the sunglasses, the sunscreen, hygiene items, treats, that kind of thing for that specific child. So they can go out and shop for that specific child and then drop off at our Coach House Kids location. And every basket has a list, we try to keep it the same for every child. And so people can take that list and shop for that specific child that we get. So when they adopt, they're getting the specific child on our list. And then sometimes people will just go out and buy a few of those things. So if we have children that aren't adopted through the process, we have enough donations to put together baskets for those children. And usually, generally, the cost for an Easter basket is anywhere from $80 to $100. So sometimes if people can't shop, they will e-transfer the $80 or $100 to go towards a child. And we have a volunteer that will shop for a child that's on our list. But we like to offer the ability for people to go do that themselves because it's kind of fun going out and having a specific child to buy for and to pick out things that they like and be a part of it that way.
Yeah, more connected for sure.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And that's the whole idea of what we do. It's community helping community and bringing everyone together. That's why we like to work with local businesses. We help vulnerable children in our in a really and surrounding area. And we try to work as a community to assist our community. That's the whole purpose behind it. So it gets kind of everyone engaged in doing what they can do. Because if you don't have money to donate or you can't go out shopping, we also have our Notes of Encouragement program that people can participate in. We call it Color It Forward. So they can go online and hit the link and print off some Easter cards. Print them off, color them in, and write a nice message like you are loved, you are valued, you are important, something like that. And they can send those, bring those cards into our drop-off locations because those cards are put in also into our baskets so a child receives a note of encouragement with every Easter basket as well.
Is there a cutoff period or day for people to donate towards the Easter drive?
Yes, as Easter is the last weekend in March this year, it's changed. So it's earlier. So we are asking donations to be brought in at the very latest, the 24th of March, because that gives us a full week to have time to make the baskets for the children that haven't been adopted so that those donations go out where they're intended to go.
Where can people find more info about the drive and everything?
Uplifting Blessings has a Facebook and an Instagram under Uplifting Blessings.
And that's our program for this week. Thanks to Ian and Will for their input, to Matt Ladder for his technical expertise, and to you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe to What Barry's Talking About, rate it, review it. You can also keep up with What Barry's Talking About on X at Barry360, on our website, barry360.com, and there's our daily Kickstart podcast available from any streaming service and on our website. I'm Dan Blakely. Hope you'll join us again next week.